This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. I am Matt Ludke back in the saddle for day three. I can't believe it either, folks. I am still here. I've got Aaron Young in the booth holding it down. How you doing, Aaron?
Not too bad. I'm surprised we let you back in, really.
You know, you're not alone there.
You got through security all right?
I thought they were going to change the door codes, but they still work, so I'm still here. Well, you can't get rid of me.
Yeah, luckily I'm on the other side of the glass today.
We got a full day of sports news here. Starting off, I mean, let's just dive right into it. I hope you heard what I did there. Ndamukong Suh, unfortunately, his reign as a reality TV star is over after two episodes, I think. He was eliminated from ABC's Splash last night. I know we're all heartbroken here in Detroit, as one of our own has fallen short of his goal of winning the show. I guess that's the goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, but, I mean, come on. This is Sue we're talking about here. He's not exactly Mr. Skinny Pants.
And I know I know Joey Lauren, but, he's up there against Louis Anderson, so, you know, he feels pretty svelte when he gets out there. You watched the show. If you did, I feel pretty sorry for you. It's pretty terrible. I'm kind of glad that I don't have to keep tuning in just to see if Sue advances or not. I'm kind of glad to nip this one in the bud early on before I get too invested. It's basically dancing with the stars, but with diving. But the problem is, if you're going to dance, that's 60 seconds, maybe a minute and a half. But diving is a half second before they hit the water. It's all fluff. The entire show is fluff. It's just Joey Lawrence doing his best Ryan Seacrest impression, but with more dramatic mouth movement. Replays, slow-mo replays at, a Louis Anderson or a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar diving into an oversized pool. And then you have the little features where they, inject some drama into the proceedings. Like last night, Sue hit the bottom of the pool with his face. And that was a big story for 5 minutes of the show, is him diving too far into the pool.
I don't think it was him. I think it was gravity and his body weight.
Right.
That I don't think he purposely wanted to hit his head.
It's very scientific. I don't know if we have enough time to get into it.
No, we don't.
But I think the larger issue and the one that everyone was talking about going in is, why is he doing this? Why would a professional athlete potentially, risk his health for such a trivial, unnecessary risk? It's just an unnecessary risk for someone who gets paid millions of dollars to have his body in peak physical condition. I don't see the benefit of it. Do you?
No, I don't. Unless the only thing I could think of is he figured, well, I'll be around water. I'll be around a pool. Swimming is a great exercise. Maybe he took an extra few laps. Maybe they paid him an extra few bucks, and so he was able to off camera and get some laps in, get some exercise in. I don't know.
And, I guess the silver lining is the only person that he could hurt in a diving competition is himself. He's gotten so much bad press for, hurting others, both on the field and maybe a few incidents off it. But, diving, it's pretty much just him in the water. I don't think he's going to hurt the water too much. Although, I haven't asked the pool.
Yeah, we should, but we should also ask water conservatives, people who are, environmentalists. I'm not sure how they feel about that big body jumping into the pool and then the water, going nowhere. It's not good for the environment. So maybe that's something to look into. We can look into more.
It definitely.
Obviously being very sarcastic right there.
and trying to get serious here, it's clear that he is trying to repair his image, because over the last few seasons, it's definitely taken some hits. And I don't know if this is exactly the avenue you want to go down, reality TV, especially a show as unnecessary as this one. As I said before, it just seems like a waste of everyone's time, including his own, and potentially a waste of the Lions organization's money. But we'll see. What are your thoughts on this? You can call 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. What do you think of Sue diving? Do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? Do you think he's a role model? Do you think doing something like this appearing in homes, not just on the field. Do you think that this makes him a role model? Do you think this was a step he took to try and become a role model? What do you got, Aaron?
Well, I mean, it's possible maybe that was in, you know, creeped into his head. I don't think he was in it for the money. I mean, he obviously gets paid enough where,
right?
You know, I don't think it was a money thing at that point. I think it's possible that he's looking for some ways to take attention off what he's done on the field, which, as you mentioned earlier, his image hasn't been that great the last couple of years. And maybe this he saw this, maybe his agent or someone else mentioned to him, hey, let's use this as a tool to sort of take attention away what happened in the offseason. The problem with that is, though, football's not going on right now, and come when the season starts, it might be a little blurb right at the beginning of the season about him being on Splash, but I can guarantee you they're going to go back to what he did on the field, and this probably isn't going to – I don't think this is going to really help his image. Is it hurting his image? No, but I don't think it's really helping him, and maybe that's part of the reason he's doing it.
Right, and it makes sense to a point because, you know, how much goodwill are you going to generate from 2 weeks – on a TV show where you dive into a pool once. He only had one dive and he was gone.
One dive, that's it?
They do five a week. There's 10 contestants and only half of them dive every week. That's how much filler they have. It's an hour-long show.
Wow.
It's incredible.
You probably wish you would have that time back in your life.
You know, I really do. That's two Tuesdays that I will never get back. Two Tuesday nights at 8 or whenever it is that I'll never get back.
Did he get a score?
I know... they score them, and then the fans vote at the end. And he was tied for the lowest. And then Brandi Chastain, who many of you may remember from the Women's World Cup back in the 90s for Team USA, she beat him in the dive-off, which is the lowest two competitors dive, and the loser of that goes home. And, of course, Ndamukong Suh was the guy going home.
I didn't know the show had fans.
Fans is a stretch. It might be a stretch, but the best part of watching it was probably Joey Lawrence interacting with Sue and just the real palpable fear that you could see. Both you could see it on his face and you could hear it in his voice. He, you know, obviously Sue dwarfs over him. Sue is going to dwarf over just about anybody other than Louis Anderson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but just watching Joey Lawrence keep his distance. There's definitely a foot or two between them that, you know, he was very keen on keeping, which I can't say I blame him, because after Sue gets kicked off, who knows? Is he going to kick him into the pool? Is he going to tackle him into the pool? Luckily, he didn't do any of that, so he got out unscathed. He's safe from any further embarrassment, and he only lasted 2 weeks, so maybe it'll be a blip on his radar from here on out.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. It's probably just going to be a nice little blip, and I got a feeling most people probably forget that he was even on this show, if you want to call it a show.
I think that's the best case scenario at this point.
Yeah, but getting back to his image, I mean, you know, he's had his problems on the field, as any Lions fan or really NFL fan knows. I mean, you know, he's had his incidents with kicking, and he doesn't exactly play nice with QBs at times. Frankly, I think he, with the quarterbacks and the hits he puts on them, you know, he's gotten some flack for some of them, but frankly, they're just clean plays. I mean,
right.
The quarterback is just too small. He's a big, very strong physical guy, and it just looks like a very malicious hit or takedown or whatever it may be. But, you know, that's just him being him.
Right.
And unfortunately for the quarterback, you know, they're usually a smaller athlete. So, you know, but he does good things off the field too. You know, he runs his regular camp for children, which I think gets around 250 children every year. So, you know, and I'm sure he's doing other things down in Detroit that are, you know, charitable work too. So, you know, going back to whether or not this really hurts or helps his image, I don't think it, either way, I don't think it has any effect.
Right.
You know, maybe he should look into doing some more things that would garner more national attention that would help sort of repair his image slightly. Because I think the on-the-field issues, You know, it's possible that someone's going to touch his buttons again and he's going to do something that he's going to regret. I don't know. It's possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's happened twice already. So, you know, he's kind of like a, to compare him, you know, different sport, but it's sort of like a Derek Nix, where he's just such a big guy that some of the plays he makes look far worse than they are. You know, there was that foul in the Big Ten tournament against Aaron Kraft where Nix sort of reached his paw around. He's doing that steal move that he always does, and he ends up catching Kraft, and Kraft just goes flying. And it's like, you know, he got a flagrant one, and that was all fine and dandy, but the announcers were arguing for maybe a flagrant two, and it's just some of those plays, it's, you know, it's just the speed of the game, and he's in the heat of the moment, and he does something, and it looks horrific, but in reality, he's just trying to finish the play. I feel like he definitely gets a bad rap from that, but, you know, going on Splash in the summer as a means to kind of improve your image seems a little misguided to me. Maybe do some charity work that, you know, you get some publicity for. Maybe, you know, tout the good things you're doing instead of, oh, I'm going to go compete with a bunch of celebrities on a dumb reality show. It just seems like a waste of time.
Yeah, I think it was a waste of time. I just don't see any upside for him on it. Obviously, he got paid to go on there. But, you know, that's the money. Oh, money's not an issue for him. I don't know what... I'd really like to know what the benefit for him doing this is. But you know what? It was probably just someone talked him into doing it, and he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. I got nothing else going on.
Right.
And so
he's not the only one. I mean, I feel like there's more and more athletes who are breaking into the just weekly reality TV. You've got Jacoby Jones, who just won the Super Bowl with the Ravens. He's on Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Why is he not working out and getting ready to defend his title?
I don't know how long these tapings take. You know,
right.
Dancing with the Stars is live, though.
You're right.
I'm not admitting that I watched
it. I was just going to say, what are you trying to tell me here?
I think I hear my mom calling. I got to go. Maybe they look at it as sort of a... there's sort of time to get away from the football world. Obviously, as we all know, any professional athlete for most of the time out of the year, they're spending working on that sport they're in.
Right.
So maybe they are viewing it as, hey, this has nothing to do with football, has nothing to do with what my basically daily life is, and it's an escape from the normal everyday grind of, in this case, football. And so maybe that's part of it for him, for Jones. But, what's his name now? Ocho Cinco. I mean, I don't even know what his name is anymore. But, he's done some reality stuff.
Right.
Other players have, too. I don't know what benefit, really, they get out of it. I mean, if they enjoy it,
and
sure.
And with a dancing competition, isn't the injury risk like super high? Like, how could you possibly justify, you know, breaking your ankle, you know, God forbid, if you're Jacoby Jones on a dance show?
Right. And what happens?
What do you tell the Ravens?
Yeah. Then you open up a world of contract issues.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure going in, he had to sign a contract. ABC probably had to say, hey, if you break your ankle, we're not responsible, and good luck to you the rest of the season when you're sitting on the bench.
Right.
I'm sure there was a lot of contract stuff involved with that. But, yeah, I mean, that's a risk you take. I mean, I wouldn't – but I guess you could say the same thing if you're going to go run a marathon or you're going to go work out. I'm sure there's scenarios. There's always something, but I doubt he's a dancer, you know.
By trade. Right.
So he's probably going to have – it's a different workout for him. Yeah, it's possible that he could easily injure himself. But, sometimes I'm not sure why these big athletes will take on these reality sort of shows and then risk, injury or makes them look weird or, I guess, to dumb it down, stupid and to a certain extent. Like, why would you do this?
Yeah, and it's one thing because I feel like a lot of former football players have won Dancing with the Stars. But, it's different if you're retired, and especially if you're a pro football player and you retire at 35, you got a lot of years to fill. So by all means, go on Dancing with the Stars. If you're a talking head for CBS or ESPN, yeah, go on and dance your heart out, you know, do what you got to do. But you're not expected to be physically fit on set. You have to sit in a chair and talk into a camera. You're not running 40-yard dashes and stopping on a dime. It's a whole different animal for an active player. And I just feel like it's a weird way to try and generate interest and goodwill and get some publicity and get some exposure, because I feel like that's got to be Jacoby Jones. They had to have offered him just because of that play in the Super Bowl. And now it's like, I can absolutely capitalize on that popularity and maybe, you know, double his Twitter followers or something. Who knows why people do things, you know, what they're doing these days. But just a lot of question marks.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, even if it's not, if the athletes aren't doing these things specifically to get more money, the reality is all this revolves around money. You know, you sign this contract, the guy just won a Super Bowl. Great. So he's already kind of famous, you know, for that. So now he goes on a Dancing with the Stars show. People start following him on Twitter. Now you have a lot more ads, people, you know, wanting to sponsor him, ads.
Right, scores money. A commercial deal, and that's money, $5 million in his pocket.
Right, money. I mean, that's what it's all about, you know. But for him, I mean, he doesn't need any more money, you know.
Right.
You know, we would all
– He's killing our cap room, so, yeah, he doesn't need any more money. Right,
exactly. So, you know, but the people that are outside of him, for them, it's all about the money and how they can profit off of someone that, you know, has just become famous for winning the Super Bowl.
Right. Well, that's enough focus on the negative aspects of making some off-the-field news. We'll take a quick break and then come back. We'll look into Adrian Payne and what he's all about, getting honored, invited to a Dick Vitale gala. So we will take a quick break here on AM 870. This is Sports Talk. Here's a quick break. We'll be right back.
Another Democrat plans to leave the Senate. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg throws 12 of his millions into an ad war with the NRA. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann faces an ethics probe and updates on special elections in South Carolina and Massachusetts. I'm Neil Cunningham. Political junkie Ken Rudin's back with his weekly roundup. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather. There's a mix of sun and clouds expected today. We could see some flurries and sprinkles, the high 42. Partly cloudy with a low in the mid-20s tonight. Partly sunny Thursday, the high 45. Mostly sunny with a high of 48 on Friday.
And we are back. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Number is 517-355-9527, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. We're talking a little bit about off-the-field endeavors, and we're moving from the negative reality TV side to a little positive story here. Adrian Payne, of course, the MSU junior forward, getting a little extra attention for his charitable efforts with 7-year-old Lacey Holsworth, who was recently diagnosed with cancer, and she is scheduled to have a bone marrow transplant soon. Payne and Holsworth are both invited to the Dick Vitale Gala to benefit the V Foundation, and that's May 17th in Sarasota, Florida. And it seems like countless great stories about Adrian Payne and what he does off the court. He's had a couple features on the Big Ten Network's The Journey. I think CBS had a little feature on him in the tournament last weekend. He's just all over the place with his goodwill. I mean, not only is he turning into a great player here at MSU, he's turning into a man. He's becoming a man, and he's doing all the right things off the court. And, you know, you just have to kind of stand by and cheer for a guy like that.
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's a great story. If people get a chance to, you know, I think, like you said, CBS Sports did a little quick little video on him, and also interviewed Coach Izzo. It's a great story. I mean, you know, he kind of fell in love with this this girl. They kind of fell in love with each other. He called her basically his sister, and vice versa. So it's a great story. It's great to see that he's sort of, you know, it's probably an inspiration for him, really, like knowing that he's got it so lucky and so good. And here's this little girl. She's got it really tough. you know, but she's positive throughout the thing. As we've seen, as many people know, as children are very usually positive about these things, especially if you have a sort of a role model, someone you can, look up to,
right.
In cases like this. She loves pain. She has her room decked out with a lot of pain posters and their schedule and all that stuff. She said that she kisses the poster each night before she goes to bed, which is pretty cool. And I believe at the Big Ten tournament recently in Chicago, they were invited, the family and her were invited, yep. to go to the tournament. And apparently she was jumping up and down in her house. Just she couldn't control her excitement. So it's a great story, and I think it goes to show really overall sort of the MSU community. This is just doesn't happen in MSU. There's a lot of colleges throughout the country that do a lot of community service-based things. And I believe this particular one was just a visit to the hospital. I don't think it was like someone asked for him to show up. I think
right.
I think the team was just going to the hospital, to the children's hospital. These are the things that MSU athletics do, the players do, the athletes do. It's a great thing. I don't think anyone could find any reason not to do it. it's a great thing, and it's so far a great story.
And the big thing with MSU athletics recently is, you hear whether it's recruits that come in or, guys that are long gone and played here years ago, they all talk about the sense of family in the program, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, whatever, there's a real sense of community and a sense of family. And I think this goes hand in hand with that. And it's nice to see, the players reaching out to people in the community who need help. And you can tell just, in reading the quotes and watching those stories that, Lacey is helping Adrian just as much as Adrian is helping Lacey. I mean, it's a mutually beneficial relationship and everybody wins here.
Yeah, yeah, everybody does win, and I think you make a good point about sort of the community family of MSU in general. The reality is this is just a sport, and they get all this attention for putting a basketball through a hoop. That's in the simplest of terms, really.
Right.
But then you have here a little girl who's battling cancer, but she doesn't get – if this wouldn't have happened, she wouldn't have got any attention, yet she's fighting for her life.
Right.
Here we are cheering on Payne and the MSU basketball team for, like I said, putting a basketball through a hoop. It should be the way it is right now, that she's getting the attention that she deserves, so that way she feels better about herself. She can have the positivity, good attitude to get through this. And the players want, it's not like the players don't want to go to these, children's hospitals or help out the community. They definitely do.
Right.
And, they've proven that. So I think it's good that they do these things, because sometimes I think if these kind of things don't happen, then the people that should get the attention, like this little girl, she should get attention for fighting this.
It definitely adds a little perspective
right.
to the entire thing. I mm-hmm. mean, it kind of puts basketball in its place a little bit in terms of, the grander scheme of things, because we do tend to overemphasize the wrong things here.
Right.
But, it's great to hear anytime that a player reaches out to a member of the community like this, and it's good to see that they're both getting recognized for their efforts, and the Jimmy V organization is one that Dick Vitale has been a part of, I think, probably since its inception, because, he's always been such a big supporter of Jim Valvano, and it's a great organization, and he does a great job with it, and it's nice to see MSU being recognized, and Payne in particular, for his efforts there, and it's just a good, heartwarming story.
Yeah, it is, and we're going to get into Dick Vitale in a little bit later, maybe on the negative side, but
right.
this is definitely a positive side of him that I don't think anyone can argue with, and it's great that Payne is involved, and the MSU is involved. It's a great story. It's a heartwarming story.
And for every terrible Dick Vitale Hooters commercial, you read a story like this. So, as much as people might hate the guy, and yeah, like you said, we'll definitely get to that. He does a lot of good for the game, and you might think he's a big a shtick, and he's, you know, just crazy, outdated, and, you know, needs to kind of take a step back. But he does a lot of good with his celebrity that he's kind of built over the years, and it's good to see he's an ambassador of the game to these charitable organizations, and you got to kind of tip your hat to him as much as you might not want to.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, my question to you is, do we need more role models? Do there need to be more role models regarding athletes? Athletes need to be more of a role model?
You know, it's tough, especially at the college level. There's so much to do. There's so much things to keep up with when you're a college athlete that it's tough to also, you know, make yourself known as, you know, for your charitable efforts off the court. It's you know, that's why this made the news. It's not all that, you know, common. There's a lot of things that you have to keep up with. There's a lot of responsibility, and when you're a pro athlete, I think it definitely comes with the territory. But when you're a college athlete, you're representing your school, you know, in addition to everything else. When you're a pro athlete, you know, if you do something stupid, your team and your organization look bad, but more importantly, you definitely look bad. When you're at the college level and you make a mistake, it not only affects, you know, the perception of you negatively, but your entire university is kind of looked at as like I don't know if that's the kind of place I want to go. You know, you hear about kids getting arrested or something, and then their rival schools are all calling, you know, everyone who goes to that school a thug and stuff like that. And you hear that kind of stuff all the time. All the negative things get blown out of proportion pretty much constantly because we love doing that here in America. But it's nice to see a positive spin on something like this, and it's refreshing for once.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about college athletes. It's they got to deal with their sport that they're in. They got to deal with hitting the books, going to class, and then the few minutes that they do have in their off time, they probably just want to sleep.
I would.
Yeah, so would I. So you're right. I think it's much more difficult for college athletes to use their own time in the sense of, oh, hey, in my spare time, all my spare time, I'm going to go do charitable work. So I think that's why they sort of set up these charitable, you know, events where the athletes go and do these. The college sets that up for them. So then that way they go and do it, and that way they don't. It's not like responsible for them.
Right.
They don't do it on their own.
Plus, I mean, these are 18-year-old kids most of the time. I mean, it's, you know.
Right. They still want to go out and hang out with their buddies. And,
exactly.
But I think you're right about pro athletes. I think once you become a pro athlete, I think that definitely comes with the territory. And sometimes I think that we don't give recognition to some of these players that are doing sort of charitable work. You'll see it in a little ad, you know, a little section in the paper. Oh, so and so does this charitable thing, and it's just a little thing in the corner or something.
Right.
Or you'll see a little quick blurb on NFL Sunday. You know, someone just handing out some food to some people, you know, that might be in need of it. But
that's not front page news,
right.
Unfortunately.
And most of the stuff is negative stuff or stuff they're not doing right. But, you know, I think as a pro athlete, a lot of that you have to just go out and do on your own. For example, you know, Sue having his own camp, I'm sure he just, you know, he wanted to do it. He got the, you know, right hands involved and they were able to put it together. So that's probably most of that was probably on him. The organization is always going to do charitable work to a certain degree. But as a pro athlete, you have lots of money and lots of resources to go out and do things for people that, you know, need the help in certain areas. I mean, we've seen stories where it's very similar to Payne's,
mm-hmm.
where an athlete will, you know, help a child, you know, kind of maybe, you know, get through a tough battle with cancer or whatever the case may be. But a lot of that is probably just on their own going and doing it, and trying to make a good image of themselves, but also of the organization.
Right. As a pro athlete, I know we've heard, I believe, you know, of course, Charles Barkley, you know, I'm not a role model, stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like you kind of don't have a choice. You're there, you're on national TV a couple times a week if you're a basketball player and once a week if you're a football player. But all these kids are looking up to you. And if you're going to do stupid things off the field, that's going to show up. People are going to take note of that. People are going to use that to help formulate their opinion of you. You know, we only get these little blips of personality from these guys. And when, you know, the one story you hear about a player is that, you know, he did something terrible to somebody else, you know, he kicked an old lady or something, you know, you're not going to be inclined to like that player, even if he is one of yours. I mean, Sue, I've defended over and over again over the last few seasons, but at a certain point, you know, another incident or so, and you kind of got to start wondering, you know, maybe this guy is just a lost cause. And that's why these positive things, if you can do it right and you do it in the right setting, and you're a responsible adult, people are going to take note of that and work that into how they feel about you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think Drew Brees is a good example. I think he's done a lot for off the field, you know, charitable work. I know, forgetting the wide receiver from the Texans, Johnson, I believe.
Andre Johnson
has done a lot of charitable work. Calvin Johnson, I believe, has done a handful of things as well. But you don't always hear about those things. They did a story on Andre Johnson and the charitable work that he did, I think, last season. But, you know, it was one – I only saw it one time. You know, it wasn't a big – it didn't – they didn't make it a big deal. And I think they need to do that more often, where they're, you know, put these towards the front. And then maybe the other players will catch on, oh, hey – if I want recognition, this is what I need to do.
Right. Maybe instead of getting a DUI, should go.
Yeah.
And,
or maybe,
you know,
yeah, I shouldn't drive 100 to get attention and then get off the hook, and then next week I'm back on the field getting millions of dollars.
Right.
Maybe I should actually go help someone that's in need.
Right. Maybe I should use this celebrity for good, because, you know, like it or not, celebrity is pretty much everything in this country, especially when it comes to sports. So you got to handle that with care. You know, it's a lot of responsibility. Great power comes great responsibility. I'll quote Spider-Man. You know, it's true. It's true in sports, and it's true with the public's perception, especially in our society. And now we should be looking at taking a quick break here. We'll come back. We got lots to talk about. We got a nice article written by Joe Rexroad here in the Free Press about hating Duke and specifically Dick Vitale. Very excited to talk about that. We will we'll take a quick break here. Stay tuned for more sports talk here on WKAR AM 870.
On the next Fresh Air, Chris Hayes, the former host of the MSNBC morning show Up, talks with us about moving from weekends to weeknights with his new show, how he learned to deal with conflict on TV, and how he approaches the discussions he moderates.
Simmer, not boil, which is our ideal space for a conversation.
Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio. Right now we're back on Sports Talk. We've got, you can call us here at 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. You can call. We're going to talk about Dick Vitale and Duke there. I know there are a lot of Duke haters out there, so if you want to voice your opinion, feel free to call in. Let's get right into it, Aaron. Duke hatred, it's a nationwide epidemic. Pretty much there's one little slice of North Carolina that is pro-Duke, and then the rest of the country is purely, harshly anti-Duke.
Yeah, and there's no cure for it either.
There isn't. It's getting worse and worse, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got, Rexroad wrote a great article, and there's some facts and figures here about Dick Vitale. The perception that Vitale favors Duke is so prominent, the Wall Street Journal did an analysis of 5 Duke games called by Vitale this season. It was determined that 13% of his comments were gushy toward Duke, but he was 11% gushy toward Duke opponents, which is a little surprising. But they also said that 66% of everything he said was commentary on the game, and that's a surprising figure in itself, because I really would have thought that it was far lower, because I feel like every time I watch a game called by Vitale, he's talking about anything but what's going on the court. And it says here 7% of his commentary is based around teams that are not playing, and I feel like that is the most important stat of the entire article, because 7% of teams revolves around teams who are not playing, and I would like to wager 100% of that 7% is about Duke. Sooner or later, he will work his way back to either Coach K, Duke, maybe J.J. Redick, maybe Christian Laettner, any or all of the above. He'll find a way to get there.
Yeah, that's a nice little stat there. Sure, we said you were great earlier, buddy, but here comes the downfall.
Exactly.
7%, huh?
7% about teams not playing. I find that surprising, too. I thought that would be a lot higher.
Yeah, well, it's possible, too, that maybe those games were during blowouts or something, but I'm not sure how many blowouts they had this year where they're, the team had no chance and the opponent of Duke had no chance and maybe the game was over, so maybe they were just talking about other stuff. I guess that's possible. I'm sure that he was, talking 100% of it, like you said, was he finds his way back to Duke.
And the games that they studied were games where Duke was playing. So it seems like maybe that number would be significantly higher if Duke were not involved in the game. And he has a quote here. It says, "It's totally absurd," he said, "of the anti-Duke sentiments. I find it mind-boggling." And that made me laugh out loud because, of course, you would, Dick Vitale. You are the main proponent of Duke and probably the main reason that people hate Duke so much. You're at least number two on the list. I think Coach K is probably number one.
Yeah,
Vitale might be. Maybe it's 1A, 1B. I feel like Dick Vitale goes hand in hand. They call him Dookie V for a reason, people.
Right, yeah. There's no denying that, and he's trying to deny it as a commentator, but facts are facts.
I mean, it's overwhelming, and people do hate Duke for tons of reasons, most importantly that they are constantly winning. I mean, that'll do it. There's nothing that generates more hatred around the country than winning.
We know one other team in another sport, albeit not college but in pro, that a lot of people don't tend to like, the Yankees. So I would argue that they are the Yankees of college basketball.
Absolutely. And it might be even more intense just because people have such a personal connection to college sports, and sometimes that boils over a little bit with the Duke hate. They're definitely a quality team, and one of the things that Rex Road mentions here is that maybe that perception that feeling that everyone hates Duke kind of contributes to teams' efforts against them and how, they kind of step it up a level. And you hear that with the Yankees, and nowadays you definitely hear it with the Heat, where regardless of who they're playing, they're going to get that team's best shot. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, especially with Duke, because whenever you watch a team play Duke, if they're anywhere near the same talent level, they're going to give Duke all they can. They are going to give 120% when they normally give 110. You never see guys taking nights off when Duke is in the building or when you're going to Cameron. And, it's such a tough place to play, and there's all this history and hoopla, and it seems like it brings out the best in people. And that's why I kind of love seeing MSU playing Duke. I love watching it because even though, it's definitely going to be a tough game, you always know you're going to get a great effort from your team. And you know that if by chance you do win, it is all that much more sweeter. It is so nice to beat Duke. It's better than winning itself. Beating Duke, it's the only thing better than just winning a game in general.
Yeah, it is. Frankly, I think it's because people are sick of hearing things about Duke. I mean, the reality is, sure, there's lots of history, a lot of great players that come through Duke, great coach. I mean, we can't deny they have a great coach. But I think people are sick and tired of sort of hearing about Duke. And when sometimes, history sometimes, I think, and especially in sports, a team may have a huge, a lot of history in it, but then the future teams and then maybe the current team, they commentators or whoever, people who write about these teams, go back and use history as a sort of a guideline as to how good this team is. Oh, well, you know, back in the day, they used to be this, this, then this. Well, it's a completely different team. That doesn't mean they're excellent now. Sometimes I think that's another reason. Sometimes Duke has always got higher ratings. They have,
right.
You know,
it's a Notre Dame scenario.
Right. Things go in their favor because of the history, which – it's not a proven fact. I mean, there's no way to ever prove that, but that's a lot of people have talked about that, especially in certain sports. Notre Dame is a good example that when you have a history like that, it bodes well for your future.
Absolutely. I mean, Notre Dame football, until this year, it was shocking how overrated they were every year. You know, there's always Lou Holtz, who is kind of a football's version of Dick Vitale, oddly enough. He's always there trumpeting that they're going to go undefeated this season. They're not going to lose a game. And, of course, this year they actually almost did up until Alabama ran all over them. But, you know, every year he picks them to go 12-0 regardless of who they have on the team. And it's that kind of thing that just gets people going. And, you know, I know it generates interest, but people kind of hate it. And with Duke, you know, at least they are still an absolute power in the college basketball world. And you know, they won the title a few years ago. They've been to Final Fours recently. But at the same time, you know, there's this second round loss to Lehigh last year. People went nuts over that. That was, you know, people who put all their money on Duke to win the national championship and, you know, busted their brackets in one day were still happy that Duke lost.
I was
ecstatic. I was dancing through the house. Yeah. It's great.
Right.
It's great to see Duke lose, even, you know, especially to a small school like that. That's what people live for. That's what March Madness is all about. You see, you know, the giant and the giant killer, and Duke is probably everybody's favorite giant to see fall.
Yeah, and I think there was another giant that didn't make the tournament this year that also went to the NIT and then lost in the first round.
To Robert Morris.
Yeah.
That's
one guy, I believe, right, Robert Morris?
Yeah, okay. He's just one man. He plays all five positions. He's a very, very elderly white man.
Kentucky was an example of that this year, for sure.
Absolutely, and Kentucky has kind of stolen a bit of Duke's thunder, especially with, you know, Coach Calipari and their sometimes questionable recruiting efforts, at least in the eyes of opposing fans. But Duke is always there. They are the gold standard of, you know, hating an opposing team. And you know, they're kind of the gold standard of college basketball at the same time. I mean, it's undeniable the success they've had, but it's also undeniable how much preferential treatment and how much dislike and vitriol there is towards the Blue Devils. We have a caller here, Apache Line 1.
Good afternoon.
How you doing?
I want to take time off work to make a comment about Duke and Notre Dame. I'm 63. I was probably 20 years old when I heard a 12-year-old kid say and discuss if Notre Dame didn't have a team, they'd be ranked number one preseason. As far as Duke is concerned, first of all, I hate Duke, but I love their coach.
Okay. I don't think you're alone in that. At the very least, there's respect.
Duke has, for decades, been carefully placed, carefully seated in that tournament to get them close to home, to get a weak bracket so they could get to the Final Four. And along with them was North Carolina.
Right. I feel like they kind of go hand in hand.
And I remember the year when they had the player of the year, and I forget his name. He played for the Pistons for a short time. He turned out to be a bum in the NBA. He was National College Player of the Year, and he beat out Shaq. Shaq ends up becoming one of the greatest NBA players in history.
Right.
Of the NBA. So they've always gotten preferential treatment. Now, I think that's changing because the game of basketball is something in itself. For example, that story coming out of Florida, that small school. I mean, that's what people are after. They don't care about the Dukes and the North Carolinas anymore. They're not getting as much special treatment. But, you know what? You play them in basketball, man, they get some calls. They get some help. You know, I remember when I'm not a Spartan fan, but I remember the last time the Spartans played them in the tournament. I mean, they got robbed, in my opinion. You know, they got robbed on those calls. I mean, and when they had the Fab Five, they played in the University of Michigan. They got robbed on those calls. And I don't waste my time. Hate them. It's a sport, like you said. It's nothing but a game. But I use words like hate. I don't mean it like really
right.
Hate them. I think it was Churchill said, you can tell a man's greatness by the amount of enemies he has. Well, Notre Dame and Duke have had great programs. And And sometimes we get a little envious or jealous, and we use words like that. But at the same time, they get some help. And I just got this point. I got a little tired of that, so I'm glad to see that it's somewhat disappearing, but it's still there. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah,
interesting conversations every day.
Thank you, Apachu. Great call. And I have to agree, especially with the seeding in the tournament. And you know, I understand that Michigan and Michigan State both got seeded in Auburn Hills this year, but it seems like every year Duke is a lock to be set in Greensboro for that first weekend of the tournament. They get two home games basically every year, and that's why, you know, when they lose early, it's such a huge deal. It's an even bigger deal than normal because they're basically playing a home game. And North Carolina is the same way. They both start out in Greensboro and then eventually, you know, make their runs through the tournament. But it seems like that first weekend playing two games in your home state, it's a definite leg up. And Duke has gotten it a lot. And I agree with you about, you know, getting foul calls too. I'm not going to whine too much here, but it seems like every year Coach K is always, you know, every time we play them, at least it's always every press conference before the game is always talking about how physical we are and how he's worried that we're going to be too physical. And then you come out and in 2 minutes, Payne and Nix both have two fouls and they're on the bench. And it's kind of like, well, there goes our physicality. So it seems like, you know, I'm always scared of that. And of course, if that does happen, I'm definitely going to blame it on Coach K. It is all his fault. He is the one who is responsible. He's pulling all the strings back there. But it's sort of that irrational hate. And I also agree that the treatment is kind of faded a little bit, and the attention has faded a little bit just with the parity in college basketball. Because, I mean, they had Kyrie Irving, who's probably the best Duke player in the pros right now, and he barely gets remembered as a Duke player. Granted, he played 11 games, but with this, you know, one-and-done kind of culture, it seems like you're not going to run into those players like, a Christian Laettner, or, you know, using North Carolina as an example, the Tyler Hansbrough. Those kind of guys are going to get more and more rare as we kind of move forward in the landscape of college basketball. And I feel like that's kind of the reason why people hate Aaron Kraft so much at Ohio State. He's going to be a four-year guy, and you kind of just develop that envy over 4 years, and at a certain point it boils over. And especially when there's so much success, and Duke has just been a factory of success. What do you got, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the what Apache was saying too, part of the reason I think that they sort of get a good seed close to home, all that kind of deal. The reality is, going back to my point about money earlier, I think a lot of it reflects on money. Whoever, all the people that are involved in, you know, sort of setting up Duke the way they do, calls going their way or whatever the case is. The reality is, I think that draws in more money for the entire sport. You know, I'm sure that is in the back of the heads of the people involved. So, you know, I think money, has something to do with it. Going back to your point about sort of the landscape of the sport changing, I think this year, obviously, we all know anyone really left in the Sweet 16 could win the thing.
Absolutely.
Well, okay, maybe for the exception of LaSalle, but
well, now don't doubt him. I mean, I don't think a lot of people had him coming this far. So
yeah,
who
well,
knows?
Yeah,
I got a LaSalle true. Florida Gulf Coast final.
Okay,
let's do it. Chalk it up.
Check it up. Ratings will be very, very good. But, you know, I think you're right about sort of the landscape. You're not going to see these four-year players as much anymore. Kentucky is known for the one-and-done. Frankly, I think a lot of people love the fact that Kentucky completely just
failed. Oh, yeah.
The players this year thought they could just walk into that gym and say, hey, please give us a number one seed, or give us in the top 10. We're not going to work for it. We're going to lose a bunch of games, but because we're Kentucky, and you know,
we'll make the Final Four.
Yeah, we'll make the Final Four. I mean, you just stick that jersey on us. We'll just show up in the court, on the court, throw some basketballs around, dribble a couple times,
and get the W.
Even if we get the loss, I think we should still get to the Final Four. Well, they learned the hard way that doesn't work anymore with the disparity in basketball nowadays. So I think you're going to see. I think, you know, you're going to see less and less of sort of this, this kind of style where teams are getting the treatment that they used to get. I don't think Duke has been getting as much treatment as you could say maybe the last handful of years. but it's still there. Teams are still getting certain treatment.
Butler is kind of like a new Duke.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's just me being, you know, hurt about Draymond Green not getting that foul call back in the 2010 Final Four when Gordon Hayward hacked him. But, you know, it's kind of like a schools that just come out of nowhere. And if you have success, people are going to hate you. You know, Butler, people used to love Butler. The first year that Butler went to the Final Four, everybody was on the bandwagon. Everybody wanted to see him go as far as they could. And by 2012, it was like, oh, gosh, Butler again. Oh, my goodness. How are they doing this? And it's just people wear out their welcome quickly in today's society, and you're going to get the hate regardless.
Yeah, you do. And I think part of the reason that people tend to, after a while, get sick of that is because they don't close things out. Butler's never won a championship. They've got there. Which is, you know, in the basketball world, even if you get there, that still is very, you know, you can hang your hat on that.
Oh, yeah. There's a banner for a Final Four, so that's an accomplishment.
Right, it is. But I think if that first year they got there, they would have won a championship, or the following year, I think it's a little bit different than the fact that they're getting close, but they just can't finish it out. It's just like, okay, guys, you can get that far, but hello, you're just not good enough to finish it out. Are you going to finish it one of these times?
Right.
And unfortunately, I think for Butler, to be honest, they got a great coach. He's a great coach.
Oh, yes. One of the best in the biz, Brad Stevens, for sure.
Right, exactly. Very respectable guy. The problem is, I don't think he's ever going to have a team that he can take to a Final Four. Or not to a Final Four, but to win that championship. But maybe I'm wrong, because as we've seen, especially this year, the disparity in teams is becoming greater and greater. And so maybe eventually down the road, he's going to have that one great year, and he's going to get the seed just right, and it's going to work out for
exactly.
him.
And 2010, they were a buzzer beater away. So I feel like once you get to this weekend, it really is anybody's game. Anything can happen any number of certain ways. You know, you don't necessarily have to have the best team to win the title. You just have to beat the teams that you have to play, you know, the teams that come up in the tournament. That's the beauty of the tournament. And, you know, if there's not a team like an 09 North Carolina, where it's just five pros, Kentucky last year, all of their starters went pro, it seemed like. I think they did, at least. It's just like, that is a team that, yeah, they were going to win. But in a year like this year, as long as you're just right in that top group, you know, you can be a top 10 team and you have as good a shot as anybody to bring home the title.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, Kentucky, I think last year was sort of a that doesn't happen often.
No. And people give it to, you know, they had all these great freshmen, but, you know, they had guys from the previous year who stuck around. And I think that's what you're seeing this year with all their failure. It's the guys who contributed last year, even the guys that weren't starters, still went pro because they were in their second year. And if you're a junior in college basketball, you are old. You are an elder statesman.
Yes.
So, and, you know, might even be a sophomore. You're considered, you know, a veteran. But when they all leave and you have to just reload like that, it's a crapshoot. And it has been fun seeing Calipari just kind of deal with all this losing and an early exit in the NIT for, you know, from atop his ivory tower, and now he's down way in the slums of the NIT. So it's nice to see there's two sides to that equation. You know, it can go really, really good, and it can go really, really bad.
Yeah, well, maybe they should think about a new coach, huh? maybe not.
Maybe not. We'll see. That about wraps it up. We got plenty to talk about tomorrow. We'll take a preview of the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. We'll look at the weekend in college basketball. That's going to do it for us here today. You've been listening to WKAR East Lansing AM 870. Be sure to join us tomorrow at 1 o'clock. We'll be back for more sports talk. Have a great day.
From NPR News in Washington.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.